you ever have to make up your mind and pick up on one and leave the other behind? It's not often easy.
Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is June 3rd, 2017, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is, Did You Ever Have to Make Up Your Mind? Pan scan or leave other scans behind? And our guest skeptic is Dr. Marcel Aimon. Marcel is an associate professor at Laval University. He's an emergency physician at a level 1 trauma center in Quebec, a senior clinical scientist, chair of CAPE's Trauma and Injury Prevention Committee, BEAM faculty member, and the host of SGEM Global French. Welcome back to the SGEM, Marcel.
I can. Happy to be back.
Well, you might be happy, but I've got to tell you, I'm feeling a little sad.
Why? I see a sniff there.
It's because I'm not with you in Whistler.
Oh, yes. I am in the beautiful Whistler, BC, attending the CAPE, the Canadian Association of Emergency Physicians annual conference. And the weather is great here.
Oh, stop. Okay. Just can you say hello to all the SGEMers out there at CAPE for me?
I'll try, but there's so many of them, it's going to be quite difficult.
Well, why don't you give us a case about what we're going to talk about today?
So, Ken, today we have a 53-year-old woman in good health. She's brought in by ambulance after a motor vehicle collision. She did not lose consciousness, but she has a small bump on her head. Her main complaint is chest pain with difficulty breathing. Obviously, you see that when she comes in. She is tachypneic and has small abdominal pain. You suspect a flail chest on your clinical examination. A fast examination is performed and is negative.
And so what's the clinical question we're going to try to answer on today's podcast?
Ken, it's a very important question we have frequently as a trauma team leader or an emergency physician taking care of a trauma patient, is that should this patient get an immediate total body CT, the famous PAN scan, or should you do usual x-rays followed by selective CT scanning to improve the survival of your patient?
Well, when we assess head or cervical spine injuries, you know, we have good clinical decision tools available to emergency physicians to guide our care.
However, as you know, Ken, when we assess the major trauma, the ones that come in your trauma bay, about either chest, abdominal, pelvic trauma, or a complete, you know, total body trauma, we don't really have a good clinical decision tool to decide who needs a PAN scan or who needs just selective CT.
Well, many studies, and most of them are retrospective, has assessed the use of PAN scanning as an initial radiologic evaluation. Uber Wagner in 2009 showed a mortality reduction in a retrospective database study of patients with a PAN scan. The number needed to treat varied from 17 to 32, according to the injury severity.
And a systematic review done by the authors of the present studies actually confirmed a possible benefit of a PAN scan, but it showed probably the need of a well-designed, large, prospective, randomized controlled trial with patient-oriented outcomes, which we're going to discuss, actually.
Well, before we get started, then, I'm going to ask you about your bias. Are you a PAN scanner, or do you like to order a la carte? And did you see how I slipped some French in there?
Oh, yeah, I see it. Yeah. And your French is very good.
Yeah, right.
Actually, I can tell you, as a conflict of interest, I'm actually trying to get a good test for the good patient. So I'm not a total PAN scanner and I'm not a total selective CT. I try to get the best tests and a good test for the patient.
You work in a level 1 trauma center and I do not. I work in a community level hospital. And so, you know, I was taught it all depends. So I'm not a PAN scanner. I'm not an a la carter. I'm an all depender.
Okay, so let's move on and see what the study says.
All right, what's the article?
So, Syringe and Al, it's called Immediate Total Body CT Scanning versus Conventional Imaging and Selective CT Scanning in Patient with Severe Trauma. It's called also the REACT2 study. It's a randomized controlled trial and was published in August 16 in The Lancet.
Let's run through that PICO, the population, the intervention, the comparison, and the outcome. Who did they have in the study?
So they had adults, 18 years and or older, with severe injury, suspicion of life-threatening injuries, or compromised vital sign. There was a bunch of lists for the inclusion, but we're not detailing them right now.
And we won't put the details on the podcast of the exclusions, but you will find them on the blog. Let's talk about the intervention.
It was immediate total body CT scan, vertex to pubic symphysis.
And what did they compare it to?
They compare it to the standard ATLS guidelines that directed your workup, which include usually a chest and pelvic x-rays, then a FAST scan, and followed by selective CT scans of individual body regions.
Let's run through the outcomes. What was the primary outcome?
The primary outcome was in-hospital mortality at the initial hospital or a secondary hospital if they were transferred afterwards.
And there was a long list of secondary outcomes. And again, I'll list them in the show notes. But just to highlight a few of them, they were looking at other mortality points, time intervals for diagnosis, imaging, and length of stay. And they also looked at cumulative radiation dose, serious adverse events, number of missed injuries, and hospital costs. But the author's conclusions were, quote, diagnosing patients with immediate total body CT does not reduce in-hospital mortality compared to standard radiologic workup. Because of the increased radiation use, further research should focus on the selection of patients that will benefit from immediate total body CT. End of quote. Okay, Marcel, let's run through the 11 quality checklist questions for randomized control trials. The first question, the study population, did it include or focus on those in the emergency department?
Yes, all patients were recruited in the emergency department.
How was the randomization? Was it adequate?
Yes, it was adequate. They used a software to do a one-on-one randomization to either allocate to the PAN scan or a selective CT protocol.
Did they conceal the randomization?
Oh, obviously no. The trauma team leader or the treating physician and even the patient were aware of location of the study. It's quite difficult to blind such a study subject, obviously, and that's to the defense of the authors.
Okay, how about the patients? Were they analyzed in the groups to which they were randomized?
I would say here that probably not. The attention to treat principle was used for the primary outcome. The authors also conducted a per-protocol analysis after removal of crossover patient. Moreover, a pre-planned subgroup analysis for patient with confirmed polytrauma, either penetrating injury or head injury, was also performed. The intention to treat principle was mainly guiding the analysis, though.
All right. Question five. The study patients were recruited consecutively.
This is unsure, actually. It's not mentioned anywhere and not specifically reported. But by the numbers they got, they probably had a consecutive recruitment.
All right, the sixth question, the patients in both groups, were they similar with respect to prognostic factors?
No, the intervention group had a higher severity score, which is called the ISS, and a lower hemoglobin level compared to the control group.
All right, were the participants, that means the patients, clinicians, outcome assessors, were they unaware of group allocation?
No. However, it's unlikely that the unblinding or the unblind patient or professional would have an influence on the primary outcome, which is mortality. It could have an impact on some of the secondary outcome.
All right. Question eight. All groups, were they treated equally except for the intervention?
See, here we have to answer unsure. The authors did provide protocols to recruiting site, but care was left to the treating physician. And protocols violation were recorded in about 10% when you look at the appendix of the articles.
Was the follow-up complete?
I should say yes. They're following up to 1 year. Here we only have a glimpse of their results, but the follow-up was at 1 year.
All patient important outcomes were considered.
Yes, I do believe mortality is an important outcome.
And we talked about this 11th question before we recorded, and that was the treatment effect. Was it large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
I would say that at the end of study, it is a no, but if you look at their sample size calculation, the treatment effect they expected was a 5% reduction in mortality, which I believe is important treatment effect, but we'll see what they get at the end.
All right, so let's run through the key results. They had over 5,000 patients assessed for eligibility, with almost 4,000 being excluded for a variety of reasons. The most common reason was that they did not meet inclusion criteria.
We were then left with about 1,403 patients to be randomly assigned to the total body CT scanning or standard workup. However, for some reason, and we can detail them later on, another 203 were excluded after randomization and even more after receiving the allocated intervention.
So ultimately, Marcel, they had just over 1,000 patients for their primary analysis. What was their result for the primary outcome, that difference in mortality?
No difference in mortality.
Yeah, that's right. They had about 16% in both groups. And as mentioned, they had a number of secondary outcomes, and we're just going to run through a few of the highlights. Marcel?
So the other estimate of mortality at 24 hours and 30 days were similar, actually.
Now, they did have some time estimates, and they found statistical differences in some of the time parameters that they measured.
As for the exposure to radiation, obviously the PAN scan group had a bit more exposure with an increase of 0.3 millisieverts.
And then when they looked at serious adverse events, there was 5 deaths in total, 2 in the total body CT group, 1 in the standard workup group, and 1 patient excluded after randomization.
I would qualify the number of missed injuries be probably an adverse event in that study, if you look correctly, but there was no difference in either branch of the study.
And they did look at hospital cost, and there was no significant difference there. Now, they did do predetermined subgroup analysis, and again, they did not find any difference. What were they?
It was actually the mortality for a patient with a polytrauma, which is qualified by using the injury severity score of more than 16. And also, there was no difference in mortality for the moderate to severe traumatic brain injury group.
Yeah, and we wanted to add a note here, and I think it's an important one, that almost half the patients, 46%, almost half the patients of the control group underwent sequential CT scan of all body regions, equivalent to a total body scan.
Another important point is that there were approximately 10% of protocol violation in the two groups.
All right, Marcel, time to talk a little nerdy with me, and we're going to go through 5 points, and you've got the first one.
So the first one, I would call it the intervention choice bias. As you just said, 46% of the selective CT group had equivalent to a PAN scan. And they may be the fact also that some of the TTL that were participating were aware of the potential benefit of a PAN scan, and they may have involuntarily slipped that way, and that some patient got more scan because of that previous literature that was published. So I think that, you know, the period of the study was done may have been influenced by the previous studies on the use of PAN scan.
The second point we wanted to talk about was this intention to treat, or ITT analysis, crossover and protocol violators. They do say that their primary analyses were done, quote, according to the intention to treat principle, end of quote. In other words, a modified ITT, or not an ITT. They had 14% of patients excluded after randomization. Another 8% of patients were excluded after receiving the allocated intervention. So only 78% of the randomized patients were included in that primary analysis.
Also, there was a number of patients who crossed over to the other group, 1% in the intervention group and 3% in the control group. There were also a number of protocol violators, about 9% in the PAN scan group and 11% in the control group. And actually, if you add the 3% of the control group that crossed over to the 46% that had equivalent to a PAN scan, then you're nearly 50% of the control group that got the PAN scan, basically. And I have also to add, Ken, here, that the external validity is important in that study. The study took place in level 1 trauma centers, 4 in the Netherlands and 1 in Switzerland. They were all academic teaching hospitals with a trauma team leader, a trauma team also present, and a 64-slice CT scanner that was available on the same floor of the emergency department or your trauma bay. So the result may not be applicable to North American level 1 trauma center, but mostly for smaller community hospital like yours, Ken, or without a trauma team leader or a 64-slice CT scanner.
And the fourth point we wanted to talk about was statistical versus clinical significance. While some secondary results were statistically significant, it's unlikely that they were clinically significant, specifically that slight decrease in time to imaging completed, time to diagnosis, and time spent in the trauma room probably are not clinically important. However, the statistically significantly more radiation in the total body CT intervention group may be clinically significant. An increase of 0.3 millisieverts represents an increased cancer risk of about 1 in 30,000.
Also, we have to add as we're talking nerdy here, the what we call the incidentalomas, is my English fine? Yeah, we got fine. The authors did mention the risk of complication of incidental findings when you do a PAN scan, but they don't report it. Interestingly, we looked all over the paper. They initially said we're going to look at those incidentalomas, but they don't record it at the end. And it's quite important here because we're doing PAN scan to other patients, to many patients, and it can lead to an increased stress, anxiety, and cost of working up and monitoring the incidentalomas that we find by doing a PAN scan, what we call overdiagnosis here.
All right, so let's comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEMs.
So we generally agree with the author's conclusion that we want to stress here that the future of research probably lies where we need to find the patient that need the PAN scan. We don't have a good clinical decision rule, and I think that's where we need to look forward in the future, is who need that good exam for the good patient.
All right, how about an SGEM bottom line?
Ken, I'm using my French here. There is no clear evidence that immediate total body scanning of trauma patient provide better clinically important patient-oriented outcome, but does result in a more radiation exposure.
And how about a case resolution, Marcel?
So my patient had the selective strategy getting a thoracic CT with plain X-rays of the spine and pelvis. Flail chest was identified along with the pneumothorax, which we drained. The patient was then admitted to our trauma service.
So Marcel, how are you going to take this information and apply it clinically?
Although this study has some limitation, and we did show them on our podcast here, this paper supports a selective strategy rather than admitted total body scan in the evaluation of trauma patient. Radiation exposure should be considered before routinely using a total CT protocol. And I can tell you from a level one trauma center, it's easy to slip in doing that routinely PAN scan. So I think in the choosing wisely era, we need to really ask ourselves, is this patient really needing the PAN scan, or could we just do selective CT?
So what are you going to tell the patient at the bedside?
So you have been in a car accident. We need to get some X-rays and CT scan. This will show us what you have injured and help us guide you with the best care we can provide.
All right, it's time for the Keener contest, and last week's winner was Dr. John Hallett from Edinburgh. He knew the first successful pyloromyotomy was performed by Sir Harold Stiles. This is not Harry Stiles from One Direction. What's the question this week?
You're listening to One Direction, Ken. I'm impressed.
I have children, you know.
So the question for this week is, an abdominal and pelvis CT is equivalent to how many years of natural background irradiation?
Well, if you know the answer, then send me an email at thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. That first correct answer, that person will receive a cool skeptical prize. Now, there has been some other FOMED on this topic, and I will include those links in the show notes. Marcel, thanks for being on the SGEM again.
C'était mon plaisir.
Well, have a wonderful time in Whistler, and please do say hello to all my friends out there at Cape.
I'll bring back a souvenir for you from Whistler. Don't worry.
Can you give the SGEM tagline, but can you do it in French?
N'oubliez pas d'être sceptique de ce que vous apprenez, même si vous l'apprenez ici, au guide des sceptiques en médecine d'urgence.
Talk to everyone next time.
Did you ever have to finally decide?